Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's a great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast, hosted by Matt Parrino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUP.com.
The Bills make me wanna. Yeah!
We're live. I was hustling. I was running. I was slamming the keyboard, Ryan, trying to get out my five thoughts and a grade on Emmanuel Sanders signing with the Buffalo Bills. We're getting after it tonight, Ryan. We spent about an hour over on Twitter. They have a new platform that they rolled out on the app. It's called Twitter Spaces, and it allows you to kind of do like a live audio podcast and very interactive. It allows you to bring fans in and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. So we were talking a little bit about the moves that the Bills have made. This is the Shout Buffalo Bills football podcast. I know you're all out there just hyped. You can't go to bed. Everybody's got to work tomorrow, but it's Zach Ertz watch. The Bills just signed Emmanuel Sanders to replace John Brown. There's a new punter in town, Ryan Talbot. What is up, my friend?
Hey, not too much. Like you said, things have been pretty wild here lately. It was a slow start for the Bills in terms of news. But now, you know, they're apparently in the mix on Zach Ertz, as you mentioned, signing Emmanuel Sanders, a player that they've tried to reel in here a few times via trade and then free agency. And yeah, even Matt Hawk, a punter who is known for getting the ball pinned inside the 20. I know there was a little controversy there. I know there's a lot of Corey Bohorquez fans out there, more than I anticipated on Twitter.
It got a little emotional. It got a little emotional for some.
So, yes, but the Bills are making moves, and that's all you can ask for.
You know, I wanted to do this kind of late night edition because, like, people joke about it. Like, you know, this Brandon Bean or Bills late night during free agency. A lot of the big moves have happened late at night. So who knows? Maybe we'll have a little show here. We'll have some news to react to. We'll try to keep up to in the comments here. If you guys have anything specific you want us to talk about, I see Joe D Pro over on Facebook always commenting. He's already got a question. We got you locked in, Joe. So we'll hit some questions as we move throughout the program. But let's start off with, before we get too much into the possibility of Zach Ertz, we know for a fact that the Bills are going to have a new pass catcher next season. What's up, Kevin Massari? Give us the shout out over on Twitter. Thanks for tuning in, my friend. Emmanuel Sanders, let's get into that because, you know, I think I brought it up today during one of our Spaces conversations that I all of a sudden, and trust me, I've been a guy that's been pretty high on Gabriel Davis and in the possibility of him really moving into that wide receiver two role. But as you get closer, and start to really spend some time thinking about it, you get nervous, Ryan, about the potential of him being the only option there if you don't address the loss of John Brown. And I think what Emmanuel Sanders does, bringing him on board, it does two things. Number one, it secures the fact that you have a proven NFL quality receiver that has a lot of the traits that I think that this regime looks for. When they went back and they signed John Brown and Cole Beasley, if you remember back to last offseason, they were going to go after Sanders before the Stephon Diggs deal materialized. So I think that's one part of it. That's good. You want to add those kind of players. They've done a good job at kind of finding them and earmarking them and then going after them and getting them to work in their system. The second part, though, is I think it takes a little bit. I love this comment. This guy calls it the beanstalk. I see that all the time. Remind me to bring that up. I saw that last episode. It was funny. Second part is I just think this takes a little bit of pressure off of Gabriel Davis. And where was he so good this year? I think he was so good in the fact that the expectations weren't overwhelming. He was allowed to grow and develop in the offense, and he took advantage of opportunities, made some big plays and some big moments. But a lot of those big plays came in that fourth wide receiver role, Ryan.
Yeah, and a lot of them came on almost like scramble drills where Josh Allen rolled out of the pocket, had to make something happen. The play broke down. Gabriel Davis got open there. It wasn't necessarily off the initial route or what he was anticipated to do. We did see him get open a little bit downfield more than I anticipated because he doesn't have that breakaway speed. But, you know, he made the most of his rookie year. He obviously scored quite a few touchdowns for the Bills. He was great in terms of production versus where they drafted him. But like you said, you don't want to leave that option out there where maybe he falls off a little bit in year two because teams now there's a lot of tape on him, what he can do, what he's great at, and not have another option out there. And by bringing in Emmanuel Sanders, someone who is still productive, over 700 yards this past season in New Orleans, where at first glance you'd say, oh, 700 yards in New Orleans, that's not that great, but you think about that team in general with Drew Brees and what he was going through this year and Taysom Hill as the quarterback at times. He was still very productive. He had five touchdowns. He's been a guy that's been getting 700, 800 yards these last few years. It was a 1,000-yard receiver from 14 to 16. So he's still playing at a high level. He's not in those prime years in terms of where he's going to most likely be, but he can be a very valuable number two, number three receiver. Slotted in there in that number two spot on the outside opposite Stephon Diggs. And obviously you have Cole Beasley on the inside, someone who obviously knows Emmanuel Sanders very well from those SMU days. A lot to be excited about if you're a Bills fan. You're bringing in a player that's going to help in 2021. He's only signed up for a one-year deal. He's getting up there in age. It gives Gabriel Davis, though, another year to prove himself and the Bills to kind of figure out what they want to do at that position, if they do need to bring in someone else so that way Gabriel Davis can be in the appropriate role going forward.
What do you think about money, Ryan? $6 million, the terms of the deal, 1 year, $6 million, $500,000 worth of incentive. You know, when the news first broke, and shout out to Dan Fates over at 13 Wham in Rochester. We had him on the Rochester show a couple weeks ago. Slam, huge breaking news bomb tonight. Congratulations to him. I wanted to give him the shout out. When that was first reported, I started kind of thinking about what the terms might look like and what I'd be, you know, able to stomach if I'm a Bills fan. And, you know, $6 million, when you first hear it, I think it's a little bit richer than I probably would have thought at 34 years old. And it's funny, he turned 34 at midnight tonight. And so he'll go into his 11th season in the NFL. I thought that might be a little bit expensive, but I just go back to the fact that I think that there's so much work that the Bills can do. They obviously traded Lee Smith to open up $2.25 million. And shout out to Brandon Bean for trading a very, very veteran tight end who has declared the fact that he's considering retirement and getting a conditional pick back, which, by the way, is probably going to end up being nothing if he does retire. But, you know, it frees up the cap space and allows you to make some moves. And, you know, we're going to talk about Zach Ertz and potentially some moves that the Bills can make there. But this is, I think the more I sit with it, the more the money feels okay because of the upside of Sanders.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, a fair way to look at it. It reminded me a little bit of last year when they signed Josh Norman. And I thought that number figure for Norman caught me off guard. This caught me off guard a little bit, too. It caught me off guard because there's still a lot of really young, up-and-coming wide receivers out there on the market. At Curtis Samuel, there's some other guys that, like a Will Fuller, yeah, there's some injury concerns attached to that. But you kind of want to see what those receivers are going to go for. And maybe they are – maybe it's a bidding war, and we just don't know that. And there's a two or three teams in the mix for them, and they're going to end up getting well above six. I would imagine all of them get well above six. But what if one of them signs for $8 million? And then you can go back and you can look and say, okay, was one of them at $8 million, given the age, given the skill set, better than 1 year, $6 million for Sanders? You know, that's something that you're not going to know until the end of the season. You're not going to know until down the road. But the one thing we do know is that this regime has wanted him for years. They tried trading for him. They were talking to him before the Diggs deal. So they have a role in mind for him, and now they can bring that role to fruition.
Let's get into some punter talk. I know everybody loves talking about the specialists. I always give the specialist talk. Don't let Reed Ferguson hear this. I know he's active on social media. The Heisman. Just because, and I know Kevin Massari was on here. He's probably just scoffing at the suggestion because he loves punter talk and kicker talk. But Corey Bajorquez, who had quite a successful season last year, led the league in punt average. But I think of the NFL starters that qualified, he probably had the least amount of punts because the Bills offense was just so good last year. So they go out, they bring in Matt Hack. You had a fun little post on him tonight. Cool little Ryan's always got the creative tweet descriptions and some fun jokes in there. And you got the shout out tonight too on the spaces on your office and Parks and Recreation's enjoyment. But you know, I think first and foremost, I saw some overreaction to the news because I think people saw, you know, some of those headlines and some of the good things that Corey Bajorquez did last year. But I think when you have an offense as good as the Bills have, Ryan, punter just doesn't really matter that much. And if it's a more affordable deal, I'm not sure if the number has been reported yet because we've kind of been in some craziness since that happened. But I would imagine they probably got him at a lesser number than they would have had to pay for Corey Bajorquez.
Yeah, I would think that's, I don't want to say significantly lower because no punter really goes out and breaks the bank and has this astronomical number, unless the last one I can think of was like Marquette King way back in the day. Yeah, we need some punter talk. Yeah, he's going to come a lot more at a more affordable rate, a more affordable price. Like you said, the Bills didn't punt that much last year. I think they're going to go into this year with that same mindset. Where they plan to move the ball, score a lot of points, that they get themselves into fourth and manageable situations at midfield, a little bit over midfield, they're going to go for it. They don't need a punter like you did back in the Brian Mormon days, where you're punting most of the time. So that's one thing. If Corey Bajorquez is trying to take his best season and make money off of it, which any good player, any good agent does, and the Bills are just like, we don't have that kind of money. We don't want to give a punter that kind of money, especially when they're only coming in two times a game, three times a game sometimes. Then it makes sense from both sides to kind of split up at this point. Hawk is very good in terms of, like I said, pinning teams within the 20. And that not just in 1 year, because I know some people were looking at Bajorquez's stats this past season and said he was just as good. Maybe he had some more. Overall in his career, he set the record with the Dolphins in 2018. I think he had 34 that season. He had two games in his career where he's had seven punts land inside the 20-yard line in one single game. So that's interesting. I think I read, and again, I'm no punter expert. I read that the hang time is there. That kind of cuts down on returns, although we did see one with Isaiah McKenzie in week 17 that did not work out that way. But yeah,
we have numbers here. Mike Garafolo tweeted about 20 minutes ago, 3 years, $5.5 million base. Incentives could push it to $7 million. So that's going to come in at about $1.85 million per season, which would also come in, according to Joe Biscaglia from The Athletic, that average salary for the RFA tender on Bajorquez would have been about $2.1 million. So, yeah, they're saving some money here. And I think, like I said, I know that this is a regime that values special teams and what they are obviously able to do in the special teams realm in multiple ways last year. But for a team that only punted it 41 times last year, I think this is fine.
Yep. At the end of the day, you're saving money. It's not a huge deal. I did see some complaints saying that for every kick that he would boom, there'd be some inconsistent ones where he didn't know where it was going. Well, we saw that from Corey Bajorquez over the course of his career. With the Bills. Now, the only thing is you're going to have, and these are minor details, the relationship in the special teams room. Obviously, Ferguson was close with him, but Bajorquez was also the holder for Tyler Bass. So that's something they're going to have to work out, figure out who's going to take that job. If you bring back Matt Barkley, is that him? Are you going to trust Hawk? Hawk actually has a little bit of a history doing some trick plays in Miami.
You trying to get me to talk about backup quarterback, Ryan?
Maybe a little.
You're trying to snake your way into that conversation because you know that's that gets
right.
me fired up.
That's right. But yeah, he threw a touchdown pass a few years ago. It was the play of the year in 2019, the Bridgestone play of the year. He scored a touchdown this past season, but it was called back on a penalty where he ran it in. He had a trick play against the Patriots where he completed a pass and it was called back. So there's going to be a few tricks up their sleeve when it comes to Hawk as well. So that'll be something fun to kind of play around with too if they get into a fourth and manageable situation, they decide to quote unquote punt, but actually go for a fake.
Joe is reporting additionally, some extra juice here, cap hit of $1.57 million in 2021. So that's much, that comes in much less than his yearly average salary. So that's a nice deal for a veteran punter. And I did read somewhere, somebody that, I don't know if it was out of Miami that said that he one of his strong suits is as a holder. So I think that that, is something that, you know, to take all you specialist, enthusiasts out there, take, put your mind at ease with the fact that he can, hold the football for a kicker. All right, let's get into Zach Ertz. We've been going for almost 15 minutes here. I see a lot of comments on Ertz and where are we at right now? There's been, I feel like there's been tons of little nuggets over the course of the evening, all of these little factors that people are starting to put together. It was reported earlier today by multiple sources that the Eagles Ertz's his team permission to seek a trade. So that's where the floodgates kind of opened. You saw that the Bills traded Lee Smith. Well, apparently Zach Ertz liked that on Twitter as somebody shared a picture of that. Apparently he started following the Bills potentially tonight, but I think that he might have been following the Bills already, maybe. Who knows? But the big piece to all of this that I think really put everything into perspective is Benjamin Albright tweeted out that the Bills are in the mix for Ertz. And let's start just there about being in the mix, Ryan. Like, this was a call that we all knew the Bills and Brandon Bean would do their due diligence and make once it became apparent that Ertz was available, that Bills wanted at a tight end. You go back to what Brandon Bean said at the end of the season and the fact that there's been reports out as recently as yesterday, Dan Graziano, that the Bills, you know, kind of targeting the tight end. And then to find out today, public enemy number one, Mr. Rob Gronkowski, was reportedly offered a deal by the Bills. He took a similar deal to go to the Tampa Buccaneers. Bay Buccaneers, of course. But wow, eye-popping stuff. And, you know, I think all signs point to the fact that the Bills are motivated to try to bring in a tight end.
Yeah, you nailed it there. You know, when Ben Albright says that the Bills are in the mix for a player, you can take that to the bank. He's as reliable as any national insider. So the Bills are doing their due diligence. And any team that feels like they are a contender and they're a piece away, and Zach Ertz could be that piece, then you're doing that due diligence. So I'm sure a lot of teams have called. A lot of teams are talking with Ertz's agent because the Eagles are allowing him to pursue a trade. So now you can kind of talk with the team. I see a lot of people saying it was a fake account. I don't know what the fake account was, but Ben Albright.
There was a fake account from Tom Pelissero that said that the Bills were trading for Zach Ertz. And
okay,
I think a couple of us on the beat actually put out, hey, look for the bios, look for the check marks. Don't fall for the fake stuff. So
right. But yeah, but Albright did say that. And yes, you know, we both follow him. So yeah, he's a great tight end. He checks every box. He's a great tight end. He can be a difference maker. And he's a veteran presence. I still feel like the Bills need that veteran presence. And it's not just because Lee Smith was traded away to Atlanta tonight. I don't think he was going to be in the long-term plans one way or the other. I think he was either going to retire, the Bills were going to cut him, or he's going to obviously get traded. I didn't have a trade on the radar, though. I didn't think any team would trade a pick for him. But they need that veteran. They've always liked to have a veteran in a room to bring along younger players. You saw it with Frank Gore a few years ago. You've seen it at other positions. So you want to have that at tight end when you have Dawson Knox, someone young that you want to bring along, to a lesser extent, Tommy Sweeney. Nate Becker, some young guys that you have there. Reggie Gilliam, I still consider him a fullback slash tight end, so I sometimes forget about him when I'm mentioning names because I still think of him as more of a fullback. But a lot of young guys. You want that veteran, someone that can come in, teach these young guys the ropes. Ertz can do that. He can be a contributor. You can trade for him, and then you can also restructure that deal, that contract, by extending him as the trade's getting done. You can lower that cap hit. So there are ways that the Bills can make this work, make this fit. And, you know, from a let's not just keep that distance between New England, but let's go for the Super Bowl. Let's be that team, the AFC. Ertz is another piece. He's another player that can be a difference maker, and that's what the Bills needed at the end of the season.
Nathan Jennings on YouTube, great point. How is there only 4 likes and over 200 people watching on YouTube? we're so bad at that, Ryan. We got to remind everybody. We always forget. Smash that like button while you're there. If you're new, please subscribe. Hit that subscribe button. Find us on the audio platforms. We always put the audio right to the platform after. And we're going to be live a ton this week on Twitter. So if you're not following us on Twitter, our handles are right there on the screen. We will get after it over there a couple times this week. Let's shift gears a little bit here. There's going to be more on Ertz over the course of the show, but I want to talk a little bit about two things. Number one, what the Patriots did today. And we talked so much about Jonnu Smith yesterday, and that was almost like the big splash of free agency on day one. Well, lo and behold, Mr. Bill Belichick had a little trick up his sleeve. He comes back on day two and signs Hunter Henry to another massive deal, 3 years, 35 plus million, crazy guaranteed money. I think the final number comes out to about 51 million in guaranteed money to Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. I think, first of all, I like the aggressive nature that Bills fans are going to like it, but I think that they had to do something drastic because as I tweeted out, I think that there was a very wide margin between where the Patriots were at the end of 2020 and where the Bills are. And I think the Bills had a lot of work to do, or the Patriots did, to kind of try to catch up. And with the quarterback situation, there's only so much you can do. But I think this is interesting because this opens up so many possibilities in that playbook for Josh McDaniels with a full offseason with Cam Newton. If he ends up being the quarterback, they want to try to run it back with him. Those are two weapons that I think, if they get comfortable, could be a problem. What were your impressions of the decision to do that and how dangerous this offense now might be with those two guys as the focal point?
Well, I was completely underwhelmed with their wide receiver additions. I think Nelson Aguilar had a really nice season with the Raiders. And you know, Kendrick Bourne, the Bills are reportedly interested in him, has a certain skill set that you might like, that you might think he could come in. So, but at the end of the day, that position was underwhelming. So you needed to bring in some pass catchers that could create mismatches. And that's exactly what Jonnu Smith does. That's exactly what Hunter Henry does. At the same time, what are you getting in those two tight ends? You're not getting a Rob Gronkowski, which obviously he was the premier tight end over the last decade in New England with Tom Brady. They've had some other great tight ends in there too, and even number two compliments. They've run this system. Josh McDaniels can utilize them, can go to work with their skill sets, can do what he can to take them to the next level. But at the end of the day, you're still signing two guys who, coming off of a career year for Jonnu Smith, and we know what Hunter Henry can do, they still haven't ever put up eye-popping stats in their careers. As the premier tight ends, they've never been the Travis Kelce or the George Kittles. Can they be in New England? Perhaps, because I think they're going to be getting a lot of targets based on the weapons that are there, based on maybe getting the ball out of Cam Newton's hands quickly or whoever that quarterback will be, because maybe they do turn their attention and shift to the draft now and maybe go after a Mac Jones or someone they might like in that range, trade up, get aggressive. But it was needed based on what they had last year because their receiving game was atrocious. Their rookie tight ends were bad. Their wide receivers were not NFL caliber across the board. You know, Harry wasn't very good. Jacoby Myers had his moment. So
I think that report out is so funny too, because Harry was so bad and the Patriots are trying to trade it. I mean, who would give up any type of asset at this point for N'Keal Harry? And maybe like a late day three pick where you just want to take a flyer if you liked him during the scouting process, but he's been so underwhelming that I think that I kind of get a chuckle out of that, but I wanted to build off that a little bit. And I think that there's probably a hope in New England, you know, within the building that they can make a deal for a quarterback. I know the obvious name out there is Jimmy Garoppolo. If they could put together a package with still probably a lot of cap space, considering how they probably structured a lot of these deals, I wouldn't be surprised if they had the kind of room to make a deal like that. And then I think the moonshot, the grand slam attempt would be Deshaun Watson. If they could somehow put together a package, although if you're the Houston Texans and you do end up trading him, I find it hard to believe that you'd be willing to trade him within the conference, you may not have a choice depending on who the suitors are, but any way that situation ends is going to be absolutely awful. But I think that if you're a Bills fan, you look at the Patriots adding the two top tight end targets, and you kind of sit back in your chair and you're disheartened a little bit, because that was obviously a position of need. And I think a lot of people got really hyped up on the Jonnu Smith train, and a lot of people put their eggs in that basket. Okay, the Bills can only make one big swing in free agency. Let it be Jonnu Smith. Let it be that tight end position. And I want to say it's okay that didn't work out the way that you might have hoped, because listen, there could be a lot of buyer's remorse really early on. And I'm not saying that, you know, maybe Jonnu Smith ends up in the Bills offense and it works right away, but I think that a Zach Ertz type of move, where, like you mentioned, you could do some gymnastics, maybe take some of the cap hit off the top with Philadelphia, eating some of that, maybe restructure the deal, push some of it down the line because he does want to restructure. Any of those kind of things that you can do to kind of soften the financial impact of that. And I think what Zach Ertz brings and gives you in an offense that already has a plethora of weapons. I mean, look across that offense. Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry are getting all of the targets all of the time. You mentioned Kendrick Bourne and you mentioned Nelson Aguilar. Those are very much role player pieces that aren't ever going to command a lion's share of anything. So I think that they're in a better position to utilize those players. And I think we've seen limitations on this kind of offense, haven't we, Ryan? I mean, we both sit here and talked a ton about Lamar Jackson, about this Baltimore Ravens offense, and how it's fun, it's creative at times, because you know you're winning in a more classic style in a league that's kind of more predicated on, you know, moving the ball, pushing the ball down the field. They beat you with some of the short stuff and the ability to run the ball. The Patriots are going to try to do the same thing, and I think that you have to be really, really great for teams to know what you want to do in that department and still be able to execute at a high level.
No, I agree with that completely. And going back to what you said about possible buyer's remorse, I know, like you said, a lot of fans wanted Jonnu Smith. A lot of fans wanted, not too long ago, J.J. Watt. If the Bills pull off that Watt move, what other moves will they have made? Would they have brought back Matt Milano? No. Would they have been able to re-sign Darrell Williams? Probably not. It would have been one or the other in that case. And you know, maybe Feliciano comes back, but you're not getting all of those key pieces back. If you can get all your core, your top three free agents back, I feel like that's a win over a Watt whose name value might not right now might be more than his talent level based on his age, based on the injuries. Some of these names that are out there in free agency get overvalued in terms of what kind of impact they're going to have. And maybe Jonnu Smith will be the exception. Maybe Hunter Henry will be the exception. We don't know. But we talked about that on that Spaces on Twitter, how the Miami Dolphins, it was 1 year ago, they made all these splashy signings the first day of free agency and in the tampering period before that, where it was Shaq Lawson and it was Kyle Van Noy. And mind you, neither of them were premier players at their positions, but they were free agent signing $10 million deals and big money deals. They're both gone. The running backs are gone 1 year later that they had signed and brought aboard. So you don't know how long these moves are going to how long these players are going to stay on a roster, how they're going to pan out, because we've seen this so many times where teams spend big money and ultimately the end result is still missing the playoffs. The end result is not coming close to your expectations. And the way some of these contracts are going to be built around the leagues, as massive and as eye-popping as some of them are, these could end up being one-year deals. I did see that Jonnu holds a very small cap hit this year. You know, great contract building, but then it gets up higher and higher as the NFL cap's expected to get up. But if he doesn't live up to expectations and there's an out after 2 years, they won't hesitate to kind of get rid of that deal and to move on. That's the way the NFL works. There's only so much money that's guaranteed. And if you're not producing right away, you're not going to see every dollar that you sign for. So I feel like the Bills have taken care of business. They've done what they needed to do. There was a significant gap in the AFC entering free agency because none of the other teams in the AFC have that quarterback right now. That can obviously change with some of these quarterbacks available via trade, possibly what's going to happen in the draft. But as long as the Bills have Josh Allen and the other three teams in the AFCs do not have a proven franchise quarterback as of now, which none of them do, I would feel pretty good about the Bills and what they've done to date and what they still may do, especially with them being in the mix on a Zach Ertz.
You know, I read a couple things on Twitter today about, you know, if you wake up on day three, day four, and what position the Bills might go to if you turn it over to the defensive side of the ball. Where are you at now with what's left out there in terms of cornerback two versus an edge rusher or defensive lineman? Obviously, a couple of names that you had put out that you'd seen reports on with, you know, Smoot, who ended up, I think, going to Jacksonville, right?
Yeah. He went back to Jacksonville, yeah.
Okay, and then where did Denico Autry went go?
The Titans.
Titans, yeah. So the Titans have put together a nice little defensive line down there. Also added Bud Dupree, have Jeffrey Simmons. That's a formidable group down there in Tennessee. And then you look at the Bills, and they haven't added. The only addition that they made is, I guess, keeping Mario Addison. And I think that there's some level of concern about the drop in his play last year, first year in Buffalo. Where are you at in terms of what's left? I feel like there's obviously a lot more corners out there. The took a little bit longer for that market to develop. We saw the big Shaq Griffin deal today. Where are you at?
I still say bringing a veteran that can be part of your rotation that can compete for a role. What's out there, like you said, it's not the same. I know a lot of fans are hoping to get better news on Von Miller today and maybe that the Broncos wouldn't accept that option because they tried to pay cut and that route didn't work out. So, you know, I've seen fans float names like Melvin Ingram and things like that. Maybe you do roll the dice on someone like that, someone that you think can come off the edge. Hassan Reddick is still out there, situational pass rusher who thrived this past year in Arizona, who wherever he lands next, even if it's a one-year deal, I would not be shocked if he does a lot better stat-wise than what J.J. Watt puts up. And then you might end up looking back at that deal for that reason, too, and say, boy, they went older, they got less production, and they had just finally figured out how to utilize Hassan. So, you know, there are some players out there. I wouldn't mind to see the Bills roll the dice on someone. I feel like they love their rotation. I don't, you know, Bam Johnson is as good as he is on special teams. He's limited in what he can do off the edge. You have older players there in Jerry Hughes and Mario Addison. So you want to find someone that you can maybe sign for 2 or 3 years where one of them goes, you have an option that can kind of be promoted and that you have some confidence in. You can go the draft route again, but at number 30, there's no guarantees you're going to get one of the top 2 or 3 edge rushers in this draft. It's possible with the wide receivers, the quarterbacks, and some of these other talented players are going to go early in this draft, but it's no guarantee. And to expect someone to come in year one and contribute as a rookie isn't necessarily a realistic expectation either. And that's your biggest glaring weakness on defense, in my opinion. Again, I talked about this on Spaces. You can have a great number two cornerback come in here, and the Bills could still have issues because as good as this cornerbacks can be, the linebackers can be, you can only cover for so long in this game. And if you're not getting pressure on the quarterback and you're giving that quarterback time to move around in the pocket, to roll out, someone's going to get open. Someone's going to scramble and get open. So I feel like the Bills need to find someone that can at least help in getting pressure on the quarterback, whomever that may be. And that's what I would like to see the Bills pursue next after, you know, Zach Ertz watch is over.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The one thing I'll add to that is I think like the pool of talent is a little bit deeper at cornerback at this stage than it is at edge rusher. And I'm looking at some of the names, and one name that kind of, you know, jumps out at me, I've obviously talked a little bit about Jadeveon Clowney. Melvin Ingram is still available, and he's somebody that I think could be intriguing at the right price. Ryan Kerrigan is somebody that I think might appeal to the Bills. Obviously, he kind of might fit a little bit more of that Trent Murphy mold. I think he's been a little bit more effective and more productive and more consistent over the course of his career. That's somebody that kind of, you know, down on the list. If you're looking at, if you don't follow Mike Clay on Twitter, go find his free agency cheat sheet. It is a great tool for navigating through free agency. But then you look at the corners, and I want to bring this up, Ryan. Levi Wallace right now with what's left after a couple moves today, and William Jackson was just his signing was just announced. He was the top corner left on the list. Then it's Richard Sherman. Adoree Jackson was cut by Tennessee. Casey Hayward was cut by the Chargers. And then it's Patrick Peterson, Xavier Rhodes, Malcolm Butler, Troy Hill's in the mix there. Number 12 on that list, pretty high, higher than I would have anticipated, Levi Wallace. I think that the fact that they're not tendering him, I think that there's going to be a market for Levi Wallace, and I think he might get a little bit more money. I think Bills fans are going to tweet a couple eye emojis when he ends up signing, because for as much as I feel like they need to upgrade from him to a guy that maybe they can put in there or and rely upon for 50, 60 snaps a game, Levi Wallace might be in play. I mean, if you can get him back at an affordable price, the Bills might be into that.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go with a little story time here, man. My first car, I called it the Silver Bullet. It was ugly. It had a lot of mileage, but it was reliable. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't flashy, but it got the job done. It got me to point A to point B, and that's what Levi Wallace has been for this team. He has been the number two cornerback. He has beaten out veterans year in, year out. And he has started more games than not. And are there limitations in his game? 100% absolutely. No one is going to be giving him all pro votes, comparing him to Trey White and those upper echelon cornerbacks in this league. But he is a capable starter. And I think that we take that for granted because he has some ups and downs like any cornerback does where he gets picked on. But he also made some plays and his confidence grew late in the year. And we've seen that time and time again, too. So When you look at starting experience, when you look at age, when you look at maybe scheme fit, some team could end up making a sizable offer to him more than what the Bills wanted, because if they're not tendering him, they want him to come back at a very low, reduced salary. But I think another team could go out there. Now, you know, you mentioned some names, and I was a big fan of Adoree Jackson when he came out, and I am still a fan of him from an athleticism standpoint, and I would not mind to see the Bills pursue him. In addition to playing cornerback, he is someone that can help as a return man. He's someone that I think he fills two roles, because now that you've lost Andre Roberts, you need to figure out that kick returner, punt returner role. Maybe have two separate guys handle the returns, but Jax could help there. So there are still options out there at cornerback, but bringing back Levi Wallace is not the worst case scenario, because he gets the job done. He's still young. He's still growing as a player. And he obviously knows your system inside and out.
Pivoting back to Zach Ertz, because it is Zach Ertz watch tonight within Bills Mafia. Benjamin Albright tweeting out earlier today, the Bills tonight, Bills are in the mix for him. I see Steve over on YouTube, not to call you out here, buddy, but with a comment on Ertz being the next Charles Clay in Buffalo, don't do it. Let's clarify who Zach Ertz is. I know he's had a rough couple years. I mean, this is a Super Bowl champion, three-time Pro Bowler, first-team All-Pro in 2018. This is a guy that has really produced in this league at a high level, and I think that he brings a skill set that is perfect for what the Bills want to do. And I think, like, when you look through the available players, like, I almost feel like every guy that you mentioned in the free agent pool can do one thing well, right? I don't know if we're taught at this point with Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry off the board. You look around at some of these players and it's just, they leave a little bit to be desired in one area or the other. And I think with Ertz, I mean, you go back to 2018, 1,100 yards, 8 touchdown, 10 yards a catch. I mean, 116 receptions. I mean, this is Travis Kelce like production, and he's still younger than Travis Kelce. I think landing Zach Ertz, I mean, we talked about it already in the show. This is that big smash move that I don't think Brandon Bean thought could happen, especially after all these deals that were done with his own players. But if they can make it happen, you do this in a heartbeat. And I think this is one that is absolutely could change the complexion of this offense.
Yeah, I don't know where the narrative came from that he's had a rough few years. He had a rough 2020. He missed some time. The quarterback situation there with Carson Wentz it was obviously not ideal. Jalen Hurts had some, you know, flashed at times, but not ideal. But look at 2019. He had 88 catches, 916 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Without looking it up, I'm fairly confident that the receptions and yard total would shatter any Bills record for tight end. I think it would absolutely shatter either record. Because I don't know offhand, but I don't know if a Bills tight end has ever gone close to that. Mm-hmm. The year before that, he had 116, 11, 63, 8 stat line.
That should be our offseason project. We should go back through the history of books and look at all the best seasons of Bills tight ends, because I think the numbers would be nauseating, to be honest.
I did it at one time, actually. I can't remember who the player was. Maybe it was Charles Clay. And I said, you know, what would Charles Clay have to do to break Bills franchise records? Because I think at one time he was on pace for receptions or something. And I put it out there, and this was years ago, obviously, we're talking about Charles Clay, but it was nothing that was too impressive, needless to say.
All right. This has been a awesome show. We are getting great interaction from you guys. I know everybody in Bills Nation is just absolutely on the edge of their seats, hoping for some late night news. It doesn't look like we have it quite yet. But we got to send Ryan to bed. He's got a big day tomorrow. It's getting late. If something happens, I'll still be up for a while, and I'll come back solo if I have to. If something breaks in the next couple hours, I'm going to stick through it, because it does feel like there's something going on. The Lee Smith trade is so interesting. The timing of it, the reports that are coming out, I feel like you start putting the puzzle pieces together. And I think that we could be talking about maybe a tight end addition at some point here, Ryan.
Yeah, it's going to happen one way or the other. And if it's not Ertz, I saw someone in the chat mentioned Gerald Everett. We've mentioned Dan Arnold. There's some other veterans out there. And the longer they sit out here, the price point's going down. I remember when Kyle Rudolph was first released, fans said, oh, he's going to get way too much. If he's sitting out there for a few more days, if Dan Arnold's sitting out here for a few more days going into next week, they're going to either keep sitting out there, or they're going to lower what they're looking for and maybe take an incentive-based deal, or take a deal where it's a one-year prove-it where they can rebound their stock. So patience is the key word tonight for the Bills Mafia. As much as everyone would love to see them land Zach Ertz as soon as we get off the air here, if it doesn't happen, be patient, because the longer these players sit on the market, the better deals Brandon Bean is going to be able to make.
Hit that like button while you're watching. Smash it. Like, pound it. And also hit that subscribe button. If this is the first time that you landed on our page, we are live all the time, all off season long, all Bills all the time. We created this channel to make sure that we're bringing you as much Bills content as we can. We're expected to hear from Brandon Bean hopefully sometime this week, so we'll have tons of fallout from that, and you know, hopefully some more moves to make. I mean, the tough part for Bills fans is this is a roster that's pretty complete. It's one of the best five rosters in the NFL. And when that's the case, you don't have to do a lot of the dirty work in free agency where, you know, a lot of teams trying to catch up have to do. So that's a good thing. For Ryan Talbot, I'm Matt Perino. We will see you very shortly. Try to get some sleep, and we'll talk to you soon.